So then chapter 7. This is entitled The King. Text 1. I will declare the duties of kings and show how a king should conduct himself, how he was created, and how he can attain the highest success. A kshatriya who has received, according to the rule, the sacrament prescribed by the Veda, must duly protect this whole world. So this is interesting here. A kshatriya has received the rulings according to the scriptures. Then they're the one who must duly, it's their duty to protect the world. It's not just anyone who just feels like it, or someone who feels that they just have some managerial ability. It means the managerial ability must be applied according to the scriptures and for the protection of everyone. It can't be used in another way. Manage means the kshatriya management means that they manage to protect. Vaishya management is you manage to create economic development. But the kshatriya you protect. And if someone's protected, then naturally these aspects happen. 3. For when these creatures, being without a king, through fear dispersed in all directions, the Lord created a king for the protection of this whole creation. That without when the living beings then when they develop fear and all that, this comes up like in the Treta Yuga. In the first yuga, they're all hamsas, so it's varnashram is not so important. It means they follow the culture, the Vedic culture, but they don't have to expand it to all the different duties. Everyone's hamsa. So they're living the Brahminical culture, basically, as grihasthas or as sages, or like this. And the duties are that of the Brahmin. But in the other ages, then other mentalities start to manifest. And so you must have a king. The king must manage the place. The king must do this. 4. Taking for that purpose eternal particles of Indra, of the wind, of Yama, of the sun, of fire, of Varuna, of the moon, and of the Lord of Wealth, Kuvera. Because a king has been formed of particles of those lords of the gods, he therefore surpasses all created beings in luster. And like the sun, he burns eyes and hearts, nor can anyone on earth even gaze on him. Through his supernatural power, he is fire and wind, he is sun and moon, he is the Lord of Justice, Yama, he is Kuvera, he Varuna, he great Indra. Even an infant king must not be despised from an idea that he is a mere mortal, for he has a great deity in human form. The king to manage, then he is empowered by nature and by the sacred law with all these potencies of all these different personalities. Because these are the ones that rule the universe. They give life. You know, the wind is there, mentions here Yama, so justice is there. Then Varuna, that is relationships and all the dealings and things that make things tasty. If something's dry, there's no taste. There has to be water for there to be taste. You know, if there's something like a rock, there are some rock dust. There's nothing there. But you have something that's succulent, then this flavor is there. So water creates that. So that you see the emotions are there. Kuvera, the Lord of Wealth, because of their protection, then everybody becomes protected and very nicely, Wealth automatically comes. When people are God-conscious, they follow properly the Vedic culture, then wealth automatically comes. So like this, all these different aspects, they come. And so then, because the king has been made of that, then he surpasses everybody in the luster. When it comes down to it, it's just like Prabhupada mentions about horses. He was saying, what's the most beautiful of the creatures, the animals? So most devotees would say cows, like this. But he said, no, not cows. Cows aren't that beautiful. What's beautiful is horses. Horses are beautiful. Just in their form, how they move, they know they're beautiful. Like you'll see a horse standing out in the middle of nowhere and nobody's there, still they'll strut around and move their hair and their tail, because they know they're beautiful. But this is the, how you say, the beauty that we see, the body. It means someone who is trained can see the beauty of Krishna consciousness, of simplicity, humility, these things. So even though the body itself may not be beautiful, there's an attractiveness because of the character that is there, which, like we will see in the brahmanas. But physically they're not so beautiful, because generally they will be predominantly vata in their nature. And vata then doesn't make anything straight. Things will be crooked, teeth will be crooked, hair will be a little frizzy, you know, or a little wavy, then has a tendency to be thin, bony, things aren't necessarily in good shape. So they're not the most beautiful. While the kshatriyas, then they are a balance of mucus, bile, and air. They're good predominance in the passion. So then they have fine features, they have the strength, they have the quickness of the mind, they have all these different wonderful attributes that are there. So then for the people in general, the king is will be most beautiful. Like that. Very, very beautiful. So then, how you say? Yeah. So then also it mentions your created beings in luster, because the character is there. They like the Brahmins, know the scriptures. They base everything they do on scriptures. They are in the position due to qualities. If there's no qualities, you don't have a character, a kshatriya. They don't base things on shastra, they're not a kshatriya. Maybe a manager, but they're not a kshatriya. Kshatriya means they respect authority of the scriptures, they respect the authority of the saintly persons, they themselves conduct themselves according to good qualities, and they want to see that others are properly behaving, and they protect them so that they may do this. So they're a very unique position. So it says burns eyes and hearts. So eyes means is a very, you know, it's very bright, and you know, when the sun comes you can see everything nicely, everything is illuminated. And the heart means that, you know, we always see is that if you want a good story, then you hear something about, you know, the kings and queens and like this. Because the qualities, the emotional exchange, everything is very intense. In other words, kings are intense. You know, they're very, very intense in their personality, in their dealings and all that. It's not unpleasant. It's just very powerful. Like that. So in front of the king, everybody else will be more will be humbled because of their great power, their great knowledge, their great character and qualities. So everyone will be able to see them. That's the thing, is the Brahman may remain humble. You don't know if he knows anything or not. You know, someone who is trained can see by the character that this is a very elevated personality, like Sukadeva Goswami. They didn't go by, you know, his matted locks and that he hadn't taken a bath and that he's running around naked and the local kids are running after him and calling him names and all that. They didn't go by that. The common people may look at that and then think, well, this is not, you know, we should stay away from this madman. But the sages, because they could see the by character, they could see the qualities there and actually the physiognomy, then they could see this is a very elevated personality. So the Brahmins may or may not manifest like that, but the king, he manifests the quality because it's part of his duty. As a brahmachari, they don't manifest. And when they retire and take vanaprastha, then they don't manifest. It's not that they don't need to. But to do the duties of a king, they must manifest this very attractive, powerful, sheltering nature, because that's what the people are looking for. Out of fear, the people are disturbed and feel unprotected and that. And so the king is there to instill that mood of shelter and all that. Okay. And it says here, even an infant king means someone, the infant king means he's been born. We see the qualities of the king there. Then they can't be disrespected because he's just, you know, another kid. But he has the potential to become the king. So the respect must be there. But when he goes, it means everybody in the kingdom respects him. But it always must be remembered, this will come up, is the king respects the Brahmin. So when the king goes, the infant king goes to the Gurukul, then he respects the teacher, like that. But the teacher knows this is a Kshatriya, and he trains him as such, so that he may be brought up and all that. One second. Vamana, you need to kind of purify that whole area because the laborers are working there. Huh? Not in the fire, but all around, huh? Before you start and put everything there. 9. Fire burns one man only if he carelessly approaches it. The fire of a king's anger consumes the whole family, together with its cattle and its hoard of property. In other words, when the king is angered when the proper duties of culture are not being followed, or the philosophy is being misrepresented, then so one cannot play with kings, because kings are very powerful. A king is respected because of his influence. When even amongst kings, then who has the most influence, then they are the most respected amongst the kings. Therefore, the emperor is respected more than the local king. The king who is a small kingdom will give respect to someone with a greater kingdom, because their influence is more. So king means influence. Kshatriya means influence. If they don't have influence, they're not a king. Or they're a king who's not manifesting their kingly nature. They're just acting as a sadhu. You know? Either as a brahmachari or as a vanaprasth, like that. We see Maharaj Priyavrata. Then as a brahmachari, he wasn't manifesting all his great kingly nature and all that. He was just a brahmachari who would sit in the forest and he would perform his duties. You know, sadhana, his meditation on the Lord, and his Krishna devotional activities. So he wasn't interested he didn't need to manifest it. Why manifest it? A king only manifests this for the pleasure or the comfort of the citizens. You know, if you come along and you hear, okay, somebody's the head of the country, and then you see that, you know, they look like a beggar and they live in, you know, some little dinky house and they don't have any money and no people around them and, you know, they have to walk wherever they go, then you're not going to think, you know, this is the king. You know, it's like, you know, one's going to think, you know, what's going on here? But when you see the power and the opulence and the fatherly nature and the kindness, you know, the charity and the protection and good advice and justice, all these things, then one naturally, one naturally is inspired. One thinks this person can actually do something. This person can protect. Like that. So it's very important. So one should never, never disrespect kings, because it's improper. You can't do that. It's not to be done. They're manifesting all this power and influence for the protection of the people. So if they're disrespected, this is improper. People aren't to do that. It means if they're a Brahmin, they don't disrespect the king. Why they should disrespect the king? They see the king as their junior, and they're supposed to be kind, you know. Or they may be working with the king as ministers, like this. Or if they're in a position where they, in the aspect of being protected by the king, then they feel themselves the subject of the king, like this. So always the mood is very proper, either as junior, equals, or superior. Another king always respects another king because they know what a king is, so they're not going to disrespect. Vaishyas and Shudras would do well to respect the king because the influence of the king is greater. You know? And the king actually protects the people. The Vaishya may have money and influence through his money, but it's not for protecting people. It's for protecting his own interests. You know, or the interests of his family, or whatever is his specific, you know, interests or projects. 10. Having fully considered the purpose, his power, and the place and the time, he assumes by turns many different shapes for the complete attainment of justice. So here is a very important thing, is that when we think of kings, we think of just, you know, someone who is, I mean, We think of old kings, we think of the great royalty and great, you know, great qualities and that. We think of modern, we think of more like dictatorship or improper behavior, just very arrogant all the time. You know, the cliched king is always arrogant, doesn't actually know what's going on, so involved in his own ego and all that. But here it says, having fully considered the purpose, like that means of what he has to do, his power, I mean what influence he has, the place and time, you know, that he assumes by turns many different shapes for the complete attainment of justice. He has to establish justice. So in that he may go incognito, he may be very humble, he may be very powerful, he may use politics, he may use the strength of his armies, the rod of chastisement, he may use kind words. He may be very fatherly. So many things may be there. So his different dress, his different situations. Therefore, they have in their palace in that so many situations. They don't just have one room that they sit in. They have their big court. They have their smaller courts. They have their places for just sitting with friends or seeing people privately. Or so much they have there, where they meet with their generals, where they meet the armies, where they, you know, so many things are there. So all this is, according to what it is, then they establish themselves. So they must be very, very sensitive to be able to move in all these different flavors like that. Therefore, it mentions all these different demigods. He can take all those different moves. You know, he can move like the wind. He can be, you know, like the soothingness of the moon. Like this, he can have the power of the sun, illumination of the sun. You know, the life-givingness of the moon and the sun, the wind, all these different things. He must have so many different aspects. You can't, just this cliched aspect of king is not actually the real king. So the Vedic concept of king, or the Vedic concept of the Kshatriya, is very, very different. We're not dealing with ego here. They display opulence and power, but it's not ego. We see from the Bhagavatam, you know, great humility in the kings that are there, like that. You may get more of our cliched ideas of king with someone like Vishwamitra, or Duryodhana, or King Maharaj Venu, but we all know that this is not the standard of kings, right? Because they're very worried about their own position. Yudhishthir is the proper example of a king. Yudhishthir, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, then Rishabdev, Rantidev, Pritu. These are kings. They care about the subjects. They deal with each subject differently according to their position, like that. So this is very important. The kings are very flexible like this. Text 11. He in whose favor resides Padma, the goddess of fortune, in whose valor dwells victory, in whose anger abides death, is formed of the luster of all gods. So, therefore, because he's worshipping the Lord, and because he's pleasing the Lord and following the Lord's instructions of how the social system must work, therefore, Padma or Lakshmi is favorable to him. Because whatever wealth he has, he uses it for the Lord's service, to protect the kingdom and to establish the proper justice. Then, in whose valor dwells victory, means because he knows, he has studied, he knows how to deal properly. You can't have an uneducated king. King must be educated, like that. So, because he knows what to do, and he's going to be victorious if he keeps good association, right? The king has to have good association of good Brahmins. Therefore, he's victorious. He's valorous. All these different, this aspect is there. Whose anger abides death means if he says you do this, you're going to get chastised, and you do it, you will be chastised. It's what means discipline and justice immediately break down if someone says, if you do this, then, you know, this is going to, you know, this is going to be the punishment. And then they do it and that doesn't happen. Then they think, oh, these person's words mean nothing, like this. So it's a very common principle in management, is never say something that you're not going to do. Right? You know, one devotee the other day, he was on the roof. He was telling me about this. He says he was on the roof of his house, and the kid was doing something. He says, you know, if you continue doing that, I'm going to come down there and you know, bring you inside. And then he thought to himself, well, I have to be willing to walk down all three floors and get down there. So if you're not going to do it, don't say it. You know. So in other words, his word, he does what his word says. As we see in Pariksit Maharaj, when he heard that Kali was harassing a cow, he went out with one aukshahini of an army. And that's like 100,000 people. You know, elephants and horses and chariots and foot soldiers. I mean, because it's like no one in the Vedic culture harasses cows. Here a cow is being harassed. This is very major. So he goes out there. So when he goes, you know, whoever sees, here comes death personified. Because it's the reaction for harassing a cow is so great, you know, so great, is that for every hair on the cow's body, that you have to take birth and be punished, you know. So it's a very great reaction. So he's going out. So this is here. His anger abides death. Means accordingly, if it's a light transgression, then the dealings will also be light. But if it's serious, it will be serious. So if something's serious, it will be dealt with seriously. There will not be any, you will not find, kings are not wishy-washy. You know? They are not, they know that if something is not corrected, then there will be problem. When there's a problem, it must be solved. You can't just leave it, you know, like that. It must be taken and it must be dealt with, like that. So they have that valor to do it. They have the intelligence, good association to be victorious. And they're doing it on behalf of the Lord. So therefore all opulence and everything is there. So that is why then all that luster is there. 12. The man who in his exceeding folly hates him will doubtlessly perish, for the king quickly makes up his mind to destroy such a man. Is that the king is representing the Lord. He is the Naradeva. Means the common person, they may or may not appreciate the greatness of God, but they appreciate the greatness of great people. Right? One may say, well, okay, maybe in previous times, as it is today, right now today, people deify, you know, musicians and actors and, you know, leaders of political movements and, you know, all these kind of things. They're deified. This is what people want. So in the Vedic culture, that's all put on the king. And that is reciprocated with very nice, protection and dealings and exchange. And then the Brahmins then by that appreciating the king, then the people themselves are protected, they become God conscious, then they can appreciate the scriptures and what the Brahmins have to say, what the devotees have to say, the devotional path. Otherwise they can't appreciate. So this is very important. So someone who despises the king, then they shouldn't be tolerated like that. They may be punished there, depending upon what is their mood, what they've done. They may be banished from the kingdom if someone hasn't done anything wrong, but they don't accept the authority of the king. The king will ask them to go to the next kingdom. Go somewhere else. Go to the forest. But don't be around in the society of the sages and the people who live in the villages and the cities. It's just one should avoid because it's not the Dharma. You can't disrespect the king. It's against the Dharma. The king should be respected like that. Thirteen. Let no man therefore transgress that law which the king decrees with respect to his favorites, nor his order which inflict pain on those in his disfavor. Yeah. In other words, if it's properly, favorites means those who are religious, those who are God conscious, those who properly act according to the law. And those who are in disfavor means those who are not acting according to that. As we see, Yudhishthira was very, 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 very careful of this. Just because it wasn't favorable to them didn't mean that there was a problem. Right? In his mind is that there was a gambling match, and, you know, in the rules the kings may gamble, and at least in the material rules. So then he's involved in the gambling match. So if he loses everything, then he can't get upset. That's just part of the way it goes, you know. But Bhima and, you know, Arjuna and the other brothers, they wanted to just go and kill Duryodhana and Shakuni and Dushasana right on the spot, you know. It wasn't even, you know, question of any delay. This, they would go walk over, pick up their club and hit him over the head, finished. You know, why bother with more? But because it is the rule that they've accepted the gambling match and they lost, so why should they complain? You know? So then they accept whatever's there. So even though it may be bad for him, it doesn't mean that they fall into disfavor because the rules are being followed. So what, this is the point. When we're talking about kshatriyas, we're talking about proper qualities. And the whole point is one becomes kshatriya by learning these qualities. That is the thing. Right? One has to hear these, be trained in these, then one develops. Otherwise, the infant king has the potential, has the natural good qualities, the valor and all these different things. But unless he's trained, he's still just an animal. So it's only when they go to the school and they take up the proper aspects of sadhana, proper aspects of devotional service, they learn the philosophy, they try to act according to that, and then they learn the culture and the social rules and regulations that go with that philosophy, so that they can establish it to see that everybody in general can take benefit of that philosophy. Then, how can we call them a properly trained kshatriya? So we may say that, well, we haven't seen such things. But we don't have to see it today. We have to see what is in the scriptures. We hear from the spiritual master. We gain faith in the devotional process. Then we start to associate with devotees. We take up the devotional process. Then we must follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. We must do that. So the previous acharyas then show us how to behave. So in relationship here to the kings, then we see so many great kings. So it's the qualities that we're looking for. We're not looking for big emerald crowns and swords and big palaces and all this. We're looking for, in the situation that we're in, then we behave according to the proper rules. And we deal with others according to the proper rules. This is what we're looking for. This is what we want. Right? This is the kings go by their character, the qualities. Then from that, depending upon the situation, as it mentioned before, then they may manifest more or less opulence, more or less influence, you know, so many different ways they may manifest. So we must look for that. So training, you have a king or a kshatriya because of the training. Like that. 14. For the king's sake, the Lord formally created his own son. Punishment, the protector of all creatures, an incarnation of the law, formed of Brahman's glory. Like that. So punishment is then, because we have to understand, is all these different qualities are personalities. They're all energies of the Lord. So when the Lord's in Vaikuntha, then he is surrounded by all these personified energies, like the Vedas, they're persons, they're personified Vedas. So all the Vedas, the Shrutis, the Smritis, all these different things, they're all personalities. And even within the Veda, you have different aspects. Like Purusha Shukta is a person. Narayan Shukta is another person. You know, then you're going to have the Purusha Shukta for the four different Vedas. So you're going to have four different manifestations, four different personalities. So like this, you have a whole host, you know, sun, moon, and fire. These are personalities. Then they have their influence and dealings in the world. So all these persons, so punishment is also one of the energies of the Lord. So this particular energy of the Lord is manifest, and it is in it here, it's a male person. It says sun. So it's a male manifestation, as it, at least when it gets down to this level. We understand that everything ultimately comes from the internal potency. So it starts out, all energies are female, but then they have their male, masculine or feminine forms according to the relationship with the Lord. So then punishment takes the masculine form. So then here, his own son then protects all the creatures because of the law, because punishment is an incarnation of the law. The law is there. One follows it, one is not punished. And one doesn't follow it, one is punished so that one will follow the law. The purpose of punishment is to bring one in line with following the law, or to make one more competent to follow the law. Like in the Vedic understanding, there's something that's done wrong. Then if you are not punished for that, then in the future, then all the sin will be accrued from that, and then that will be very difficult for one to properly follow the law in a future time, either in this life or in a future life, because then all that sin in that will be there within the heart, and that sinful nature, sinful desires, so naturally one will not want to follow the law. So by punishment, then one is cleared of that reaction. So there's no reaction. It's been taken care of by the punishment. So therefore, there's the aspects of the punishment of the activity that's done, and then there's the devotional, purification of the heart. That is the most important. The punishment only gets rid of the reaction that's there. It doesn't get rid of the desire in the heart. Therefore, that whole discussion in the sixth canto about prayaschitta. But prayaschitta, it doesn't purify the heart. It gets rid of the reaction of the sin that you've performed. And therefore, one is not in such a bad situation that one may make a better decision next time. But the material desire still that created the previous sin is still there. So only devotional service removes those sinful desires. So it's most important that a real king who knows what's going on has to establish dharma in line with devotional service. In other words, dharma has to be those activities which are favorable to devotional service. It's not just activities that are favorable for the material culture, the social culture, but it is activities that are favorable for devotional service, like that. That is what is there. 15. Through fear of him, all created beings, both the immovable and the movable, allow themselves to be enjoyed and swerve not from their duties. So out of fear of the king and the rod of chastisement, right? Krishna mentions that. He is the rod of chastisement. Out of all the different aspects of the king, then that is the most prominent. Because that's what people are, the bottom line is that. Bottom line is that, okay, there's all these nice things and duty and this and that, but if I don't do it, I'm going to get in trouble. And we know we will be punished. So that keeps everything working properly. All the it says here, moving, non-moving, so on one of the non-moving. And the non-moving are working under the direction of the devas. And the devas are then doing their duties out of fear of Indra, fear of the Lord. Even Indra's doing out of fear of the Lord. Everybody's doing. So out of the fear of the punishment of the Lord, everybody's doing what they do. So that is represented here on earth by the Kshatriya. Like that. And they allow themselves to be enjoyed means they perform their duties properly, they're humble and all that. So in their relationships with others, they're not trying to take the position of enjoying the other people. Then others enjoy their association, their service, their protection. Even the citizens enjoy. The king is also doing his duties. he also has fear of what's above him. So the citizens enjoy the facilities and the protection offered by the king. So everybody in the Vedic culture is enjoying, because everybody is not trying to themselves be the enjoyer. As soon as someone's trying to be the enjoyer, it throws everything off. As we saw in the end of the last chapter, it was mentioning that those who are following the Vedic system, then they follow all these principles that are mentioned also for the sannyasis and for the hermit, is that their cleanliness, their respect of other creatures, not trying to be enjoying, controlling the senses, they must be all doing those aspects. Then, with that, doing the specific duties for their particular ashram. 16. Having fully considered the time and the place of the offense, the strength and the knowledge of the offender, let him justly inflict that punishment on men who act unjustly. So all this has to be taken into consideration, is that the time and place of the offense. Because there may be an offense, but because of the time and place, it's not very great. Someone kills somebody. So if that happens in the middle of a marketplace and for no reason, this is a very great offense, especially if it's just an innocent person. But if this is out on the battlefield, then there's, you know, there's no offense. I mean, it's judging that, then there's no offense. So if somebody's being killed, so that's naturally an offense, but that there's no sin. So the king has to see what is the sin that is there for the activity that's been done. So the time and the place, that must be seen. The strength of it, how heavy was the offense. And the knowledge of the offender, like a small child, sometimes they do all kinds of crazy things, but they're not punished very severely. They may be just talked to, or just educated, or chastised a little bit, or a little bit more. Depends upon what it is and if they know anything or not. Sometimes they don't know. So then you can't chastise them very heavily. Someone who doesn't know cannot be chastised very heavily. You can't make up a rule and then people don't know it and then chastise them for that. No, they have to know it's there first. Then after that they have to be chastised. So if it's something quite common, then, and they were not quite sure, then it's considered. Their knowledge is not so much, though it may be a great offense, therefore the punishment is less. It may be a great offense, but lack of knowledge. Or a great offense, but the time and place doesn't make it very great. Like that. So you have to balance all of that. So the king has to be very knowledgeable in the scriptures, in the understanding of relationships, law, the effects it has on people. He can't be insensitive. He has to know what effect it has on other people. And therefore, why the law is there. It means, why is it a criminal offense? Why is it punishable? You know, for what reason? He has to know this. So that means they have to be knowledgeable. Like, why is it improper someone passes stool on the road? Right? One, it's public place. Everybody has to walk there. It's a great inconvenience for people, you know, like that. It increases disease. People unknowingly, especially children or people who are spaced out, may step in it, you know. It invites all kinds of animals that you don't want wandering around the street, your dogs and pigs, you know. So many things are there. Someone has to know, and you have to understand what someone will feel by either seeing this on the road or by having, you know, stepped in it or smelling, or what inconveniences are there, or what kind of diseases that can come up due to this. So then you can understand how serious it is. Right? One may say, oh, it's not very serious, but you have to know what that does for other people. Right? You have to know. Then they can be punished. If you know how much it disturbs someone, like if someone's polluting the atmosphere or polluting the streams, they're running some kind of factory, they're dumping all kinds of pollutants into the streams. So then what that does, it ruins the animals that are living there, kills the animals, the water becomes undrinkable, so many people depend upon that. That water will be used for watering the fields, so that contaminates the fields and the vegetables, so people become disturbed there. You know, so it, so much disturbance is done. Someone will say, it's not a big deal. I just dumped a little something in there and I make some money. You know, like that, we got to live. But by one person living, so many others then die. Or are inconvenienced. You know, or the health is disturbed. So one has to understand how strong it is. So we see in the modern thing, it's not seen so strongly. Only when you have tons of people yell and scream about it, then the government may say, oh, this is something. But it means that they don't actually understand what is happening, why something is there, why laws are there, what it has on people. And people are individuals, how they will take this, how they will feel about this. Right? Therefore, many times you see in the Vedic thing, punishment is strong. We may say, you know, that in the modern society that, you know, we should be, we can't do like this, this is very severe. So maybe in certain situations, yes, it may be more severe than is required. But at the same time, as if you see how people react to things, right? How people react, they want to see something strong. Something happens, people are out marching. You know, even things happen to devotees. Devotees, you know, are very not satisfied. You know, devotees for themselves want everybody to be liberal, or in the activities that they do, everybody else should be liberal, or with their own friends. But when it comes to someone else that they don't know or don't really care about or that, you'll see that they're very, 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 very strong. Very, very strong. You know? I've seen myself. GBC is very liberal on point. And the reaction, the backlash from the devotees is so heavy. You know? Like this. So we may say we're very modern and liberal and all that, but in actual practical life, then many times we don't see we are. Because one can actually only be liberal if one is God conscious. And one understands purposes behind all activities. Then one can actually be liberal. And that's not liberal in the Vedic sense means broad-minded. One is able to consider all these things: time, place, circumstance, strength, knowledge of the offender, of the offense. That is broad-minded. So therefore you can see, and this is not much, and they're devotees, so by chanting, then this will be removed. Like that. As long as they have the right attitude. They feel, they understand what is wrong with what they've done. Then it works. Like that. Then it works. But otherwise, then if one doesn't give some strong reaction, then people think nothing's going on. But it has to be in knowledge. It can't just be because people want it either. Point is, my point of point giving this example is, even devotees expect strong discipline. They're looking for it. They're looking for strength. They're looking for this kind of justice. But the point is Kshatriyas will only implement justice based on the scriptures. They're not going to go against the scriptures. So that is where the problem comes with liberality. Liberality means you compromise the standards. When you compromise standards, there's no benefit. Broad-mindedness means you don't compromise any standards. You know the standards so well that you know how they apply at every time, place, and circumstance and the personalities involved. So therefore, adjustments can be made to perfectly fit that person. Like that. Right? Just like you have somebody, not a devotee, and they're eating prasad, you know, some grains on Ekadasi. So then some new devotee will say, oh, they're going to go to hell for eating grains on Ekadasi. They're already going to hell anyway. But they've taken prasad, so for this there's unlimited benefit. So the unlimited benefit of taking prasad unlimitedly outweighs the problem of the person going to hell. Right? Now a devotee who's serious about devotional service, he wants to please the Lord. So he knows better. The other person is ignorant. So just that he's taken prasad, Krishna is happy. But once one knows what is the proper standard, then if one eats grains on Ekadasi, especially knowingly, then that's a great offense. Then you bring out all the nice shastric evidence. It's like killing one's own mother and father and all these different things. So the aspect of knowledge, the time, place, circumstance, all these things have to be taken. So this is broad-mindedness. That's not liberality. Many times, it'll be difficult for the person. You know, I've seen many times in puja, we're doing an abhishek, and the standard is no sewn cloth. So we're doing like that. Then some big life member comes, and then you'll have some people who are liberal. And they say, no need for him to take off his shirt, he's a big life member, he doesn't know all these things anyway, and all that. And it's a problem for him. Why be so fanatic? So this is dropping the standard, right? The person's a devotee, they've come to worship the Lord. If you teach them better how to serve the Lord, they're happy. They have no problem. They have no problem, right? Because as soon as you mention, then the pujari goes over to that life member and says, you need to come with a chadar. Then you'll see the man turn his head to his you know, wife or son, whoever's standing about 3 feet away, and says, give me my chadar. Right? And then he takes the chadar. He already knew they're Indians. They know the culture. Right? He's already brought the chadar. But because he sees, he's thinking the Westerners have a lower standard, maybe they don't worry about wearing chadars, they wear shirts. So, you know, I'm wearing my shirt, I'll go there. But if the standard is proper, I take off my shirt, wear my chadar. Right? So one has to be very careful to see that liberality does not mean compromising the proper Krishna conscious standards like that. So here the king judges all this very well. Therefore he's broad-minded. Right? He's not liberal. And because in Vedic culture, broad-mindedness is called liberalness. So whenever it mentions being liberal, that's what it means. It doesn't mean the modern concept of reducing compromising standards. Like that. Therefore then we have to say broad-minded and liberal. But in the Vedic text, there is no such thing as compromising standards. That's an educated person won't do that. Therefore, you know, it's not discussed. But in the modern time, it's good to mention it. Says him, let him justly inflict that punishment on men who act unjustly. Yes.
Is the person who receives the punishment, are they supposed to understand the principle behind why they're receiving the punishment?
That is always the best. Means that in the whole process, the education must be there. And generally, when you have kings, they can't work without that. You know, it's just like a tiger can stalk an animal and then just leap out from nowhere and kill it. A lion cannot do that. A lion just can't do that. It may find the animal. Then it will roar. Because there must be a challenge. There must be exchange. Then now it is the challenge, who runs faster? The lion or the animal, the deer? The deer runs faster, he wins. You know? And the lion has to respect that this deer was very fast. And if the lion wins, then naturally the deer must respect that the lion was better. So the point is they deal like that. So they let them know. You see, it's a very, very common thing is that the kshatriya must tell someone who it is. Just punishing for punishment's sake has no taste, there's no rasa. Because that's just based on some anger or one's own pride or one's own, how do you say it?
Maliciousness,
but also just the pride of that one is better, you know, holier than thou kind of thing. So the thing is kings don't work like that. You must know what you did wrong. And there, because the point is the main reform of any improper action is remorse. That actually removes 100% of the problem. But the thing is you can't always tell if someone is remorseful. And the common people, if they didn't see the remorse, they don't believe it. Right? If they're there at the time, they see the emotions, they see the exchange, and they say, oh yes, the person's very remorseful. But if they only hear about it, they don't care. They want to see some heavy punishment. So therefore, the punishment is generally given. Like that. So the point is it must be explained. Then based on that, you accept the authority of the scriptures, accept the authority of the king. Then that punishment is carried out. You don't accept the authority of the king. You may just be banished from the kingdom, sent out to the forest. Like that. That doesn't mean that they may not, you know, brand something on your forehead or something so that everybody knows that there is some problem. You know, so you won't just easily come back into society. But it will be like they'll be dealt with that if they don't accept the authority of them. So the must tell. That was the how do you say? You see, that was like a common thing in the war, even in wars and warfare up to the, you know, into the 1700s and all that, is the armies had to face each other, see each other. Then they would fight. They would get the command to fight, and then they would fight. They wouldn't just come out of the middle of nowhere. So shooting from behind, this and that, just didn't make sense to them. You know, it just wasn't proper. So there's always that kind of there's a relationship there between, it's just like the parent and the child. The parent who just, the child does something wrong and just chastises them, and that without educating them, then isn't complete in their care for the child. Because the child's done wrong, and then they generally will be punishing them out of their care to see that the child does properly. But if you really want them to do properly, you have to educate them as what is proper. And if we say, well, I already told them and then they did it, it means if they did it again, that means they didn't actually understand. Maybe they knew the rules there, but they don't really understand why. You know? Or you've told why, but it hasn't been explained to the point where it actually gets through to their they don't realize it. So education is always part of the process. Always part of the process. Because the problems are coming from the Shastra. The rule is coming from the Shastra. So if the rule is being broken, then the Shastra must be understood, explained. If there's an unwillingness, then that's another thing. Does that make any sense? Yeah.
In modern society,
speak loud.
In modern society, there'll be a problem where this liberal mentality will stop the correct punishment being enforced, and therefore people become sinful.
Yes, we see that the liberalness encourages sense gratification, but that is basically what people want. The main thing is just, how you say, they're just kind of hoping they don't get caught, or they should just, if everybody's into it, then what's the problem? That's the thing of vox populi. But we see that even in places like in America, where they've become liberal, they've gotten rid of, let's say, the capital punishment and all that, and then just things get out of hand. Many states that have outlawed capital punishment, the people themselves vote it back in. You know? Like that, because they just see without it, you know, who cares? It's like this. You do something wrong, you're going to end up in jail. Then, you know, there's so many rights of the prisoners and they have to take care so nicely. So life's not going to be that bad, you know, maybe a little boring. And then after some time, you're going to get out. Unless you did so many things wrong that you got booked for, you know, 493 years in prison, then it's going to be a little hard to reduce it down below, you know, a full life sentence. But in the meantime is, you know, for that life sentence, the taxpayers are going to have to pay, I mean, that was about 10 years ago, are going to have to pay about $1 million in America to maintain the person. Right? Like that. So therefore you have a prison full of, you know, 100 people like that, that's $100 million. You know? So it's, and people just see this is ridiculous. You know, if a person's killed somebody, then you know why should we spend $1 million just to be nice? You know, so the liberalness they see isn't any value, and more people just do the same thing. So there's no advantage. There's no advantage. Just one thing is, if the whole idea of the liberal is that the poor person will feel remorse and correct themselves. But then, if you don't educate them why it's wrong, how they're going to feel remorse? But if it's okay, then no one's going to feel any remorse. Why they'll feel remorse? Right? That's the whole point. Broad-mindedness means that you educate them, they feel remorse, and depending upon that and the situation and all that, then you award the punishment. But if you're just liberal and just kind of let it go, then what's the meaning?
Ignorant activity.
Yeah. So it's there. So it's interesting, though, even though people want liberality, but you see when it comes to their leaders, they don't really want liberality. You know? You see, is that they expect their leaders to be kind of impeccable, to have good character, good qualities and all this. The latest weapon that people use in politics now is to, you know, dig around and find some impropriety in the, you know, the opposite person who's running for office, and then make it publicly known that no one wants to vote for him. Right? Because people don't want bad leaders. They may be bad, others around them may be bad, but they don't want the leaders to be bad. Like that. Yes.
If the sinner is educated and he feels remorse, then punishment has to be there, or punishment can be...
Well, punishment is, see, is you're also dealing, if you're in the, if you're dealing with devotees, those who are God conscious and who actually respect God's law, then for some, you know, reason, weakness of the senses or some other, you know, unknown bad association of that, they may break the law. So then that actual sincere remorse, the punishment is not so much required. Something should be there. Because the point is the mind learns by habit. And if something is, you know, if something's very light, that's one thing. But if something's not very light, then you have to create, you've done something. So that means that has come after long thought, and that it's allowed you to do that. You know, unless it's just some very strange thing that just happened. But that means more ignorance and these kind of aspects. But then the, what do you call it? Thank you. But if the actual education is there, the real remorse is there, then we're talking about the other thing. Yeah, so therefore punishment is there so that again and again the mind can be reminded of that this is wrong. So it starts to get the habit of thinking in the proper way. So the punishment gives that time for the mind to seriously understand and change the habit. Right? Like that. So that is the idea. Now with the devotee, then you have the aspect of the devotional service that is destroying all the desire seeds and all that, if one is conscious of them. So if one is doing something, means one's not conscious of them, or one is not educated enough or has good enough association to conquer that. So therefore they would be given the proper association and everything and the instruction and the service that would correct the person. That must be seen. Like that. So the punishment has to be in the form of what service will actually correct them. And the knowledge has to be given in the good association. It's all a package. It's all a package. Okay. Yes? Yes. Speak loudly. Means it, you're depending upon the situation. That's why it says here. See, it'll get into that later. We're talking principles now. We're not actually getting into details of civil codes. I mean, half of the book is on that. You know, so that's not the main discussion here. Like that. The point is that the purification must be there. And so depending upon the person and the time, place, circumstance, you know, all that, the knowledge and all that, then you have to apply the punishment. So in this, if we take a theoretical, you know, example, then it has to be so complete, the theoreticalness, then you can say. But you just change one of these things, and then the whole thing changes. So that's why the principles first must be understood. So we're just going through just what is the mood of a king. We're not getting into how he applies the justice. In other words, we're not getting into the law right now. We're just getting into that the king works according to the principles of this time, place, and circumstance, strength, and knowledge of the offender. Like that. That's the point. What time is it? 1:20. Any other questions on that? Okay.
When he's a king, and he has the ability to deal with individual situations, does it mean like the king and the king's entourage, his judiciary board?
Means the king himself. Means the king himself can deal with the smallest or greatest offenses. Because if a kingdom is run very nicely, then there's not that many things going wrong. So the constables are always going out and catching anybody who is and then bringing him before the king. And the king deals with these things. But as we see, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he knew how to deal properly. He knew how to deal with the time, place, and circumstance. He knew the law. I mean, as he was dealing with British law, he knew it. Right? Because any law is basically going to be based on the Vedic law, the principles of it. If you have a God-fearing law, if it's not, if it's just a matter of economics, and you know that kind of thing in politics, then that's another thing. But if there's more, then there's going to be the respect of the individual and their properties and their personage and their families and all this. So he knew the law. Therefore, he would hear a case, he would hear both sides, and then he would just immediately give a judgment. You know, 5 minutes in a case. He had no pending cases. And when some other, you know, judges and all that came to know about this, then there was thinking, well, maybe he's just doing it, you know, and like that. But they came and heard, they read what his case things were, and they saw that they're backed up. He actually would give the precedent. So he had read through all the volumes of books and all that you're expected to know. So therefore it was, and then they couldn't. So this is judgment. This is that activity. It's done so quick, so they don't have to sit there for days and days and listen. They just hear this, they hear that, they hear the situation, they know they can tell by the person, they know psychology, they can see so many things. They do everything according to the Shastra. And, you know, you have your witnesses and then all these different things, and then they deal accordingly. Then there's also the ministers are there in case they think that maybe there's some other aspects that the king missed. So the ministers are there. You know, so that one can also deal with that. One can also appeal these things and all. So generally everything is done very, very quickly and very, very nicely. It means speak loudly. Means what we're saying is if the kingdom is run properly, there's not going to be anything happening wrong in it. Right? Like in Pratikit Maharaj's kingdom, nothing was going wrong. Right? Kali Raj is doing something, but it's not in the main kingdom. It's out in the, you know, out in the outback, you know. It's way over towards the Middle East. You know, it's the deserts. It's the place for people who kill Brahmins. you know, like that. So then these things are going on. So then he sends a whole army and goes that direction. And Kali, and he says that, you know, you have to give him a place to stay. He surrenders. So he says, okay, where's all there's meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling? He says, well, that's very nice. I mean, I appreciate the places. You know, I have no problem with that. But unfortunately, in your kingdom, none of these exist. Right? None of them exist. So then, because he's offered shelter, he has to give him a place. So he says, okay, therefore, they're where gold is being hoarded. So then from the hoarding of gold come these others, naturally come up. But then just, there was nothing going wrong in his kingdom. Therefore it was taken so seriously. Ramachandra is also, nothing's going wrong in the kingdom. So the kingdom at the time of Yudhishthira, when they were ruling, then the Brahmin whose sons were being taken by Mahavishnu, he came and complained to the kings. Because according to their rule, if the king is ruling nicely and the citizens are behaving properly, then the son will never die before the father. The natural thing is who's born first dies first. So the father will die before the son. You know? Like that. So then if the sons are dying first, so what nonsense is this? And he's going and saying, you guys are only so-called kshatriyas. You know, you sit there on your thrones and... Well, it's, you know, say so many things, but you know, you're not kings. So then Arjuna comes out, you know, like that. You know, how can you say like this? And then he makes a vow: if we don't find out what's going on here, if I can't protect your children, then I will enter the fire. So then he was there with his bow and arrow ready, but then again that sun disappeared. So then he was ready to enter the fire. Then Krishna came along and says, no, let's go. I know where the kids are, like that. So then, like this. So they're a very unique bunch. Besides that, then the ministers, they take care of things, very common little things that the constables will take care of. So there's a whole thing going on. But generally, if there's any dispute, it goes up to the king, or at least up to the prime minister. Like that. Because if it's so well managed, you don't have all this stuff. I mean, you don't have dacoits and thieves. They stay in the forest. They won't come in. But if they know the kings are weak, they'll come into the villages, to the roads, and this and that. Like you see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he went to Vrindavan. The place was famous for dacoits. He himself, then working with the local authorities, got rid of those dacoits. That's a king. So one may say, well, in Vrindavan there's so much thieving going on and people being injured and all these different things and come up, and then the thieves themselves are fighting amongst themselves. So that will create so many court cases, and how they'll have the time to do that. They don't bother with that. They just go and find the thieves and get rid of the thieves. Then no thievery, no disturbances like that. So then where is the too many cases? Right? You just start taking care of them, and they disappear. Especially you take care of the first, you know, you start from the heaviest ones and just start with those. And everybody below that, you know, starts to figure out, you know, if they're getting the big guys, you know, we're next. Right? That's all. So like that, they're just very thorough. And that's their business, is seeing that justice and law and order is established. So then the people have no problems. People are no anxiety. So the cases are very, very few. Anything else? Or? Yes.
Question from yesterday.
Should have asked it a little earlier, because now is end of the class time. What is the question?
It's the one about dependence. They're meant to be able to, if someone's giving shelter at the dependence, they should be able to save them from death and liberate them, and that's guru, teacher, father. I was just wondering, will that mean that they have to be able to actually integrate them?
Means according to their capacity, they must themselves understand that the goal of life is to go back to Godhead, and that entanglement in the material nature is not the purpose of life. So as much as their realization, then they must give that to their dependents. How much the mother knows, she must tell that to the child. How much the father knows, he must tell. You know? How much the king knows, the demigods, the teacher, that they must tell. And they must see that that is learned and understood. So that's their duty. So if it means like someone like Daksha, even though he's very expert at having children, he is not actually a good parent. Because he's not worried about saving his dependents from death. In fact, Narad Muni is doing him a great service by doing what he's supposed to do. And he's getting upset and saying, calling him sinful and all these kind of things. So Daksha is actually, even though he's very expert at having children, he's not actually a good parent. Because you have to save them from death. That's the first thing. Then, since they're going to be in this body until death, therefore they should get the training and things that they need to move in the society and to be able to maintain themselves in the society. But that's secondary. Otherwise, if one just eats and sleeps very nicely, but one doesn't know about going back to Godhead and that seriously, and that is one's main endeavor and main goal and main value, then what is the great glory? I mean, the cat also trains up the kitten how to go out and hunt. You know? The mother bird also shows the baby bird how to, you know, eat bugs. What's the glory? The animals are doing fabulous. You know? Like that. So it's not... That's the symptom of the Kali Yuga. If you can just take care of the family, it's like, you know, the greatest thing. But that's secondary. It has to be done. But it has to be done in line with understanding that going back to Godhead is the foremost thing. Therefore, one will not involve oneself in the material nature more than what he can handle. If one cannot make much money, he shouldn't have many material desires. He'd be a fool to maintain them. Because he can't fulfill them. And if he thinks someone else owes it to him, then he's a greater fool. Because the reason he can't make any money is because in previous lifetimes he's wasted the facility. He's gone against Krishna's law. He's broken the proper law of economic development. Therefore, in this life he can't make a cracker. Unless he's come up to the point he doesn't care about making any crackers. And that's the Brahman. Something comes, nice. It doesn't come, nice. Doesn't matter. Right? Like that. But if he has the intense desire but can't get it, that's due to sin. So no one owes him anything. He should just accept, I should just take what comes easily and all that. Because everyone will be maintained. When you're born, your rice is born along with you. Your maintenance is born with you. So it's already there. It's just you have to do your prescribed duties, and then the Lord being pleased, you get all the facility you require. So you must train them in Krishna consciousness. That's the foremost duty. The other things are all secondary. Okay? Yes.
Sometimes Vaishyas are called kings also.
Vaishyas are kings. They're kings amongst Vaishyas. They're not kings amongst kings. They're Vaishyas. That's what's meant by aristocracy. When you ever hear Prabhupada talk about aristocratic, it means they're very wealthy. Wealthy Vaishya, or they've come that way by, you know, fame, wealth, something. They're not royalty. Therefore, there's a difference between royalty and aristocracy. Like that. So they become that because they are expert in managers. A Vaishya must be a good manager. And a big businessman must be a bigger manager. So they have the managerial ability that they can run the whole, like, you know, generally village or, you know, tract of land. But basically, managing that land and taking the tax from it is their business. So they're they become landlords, like that. Landlords are like small kings. They collect from the people, then they pay tax to the kings above them, like that. So then they get given. The land is generally not theirs. You know, that's their tract of land. The lands all belong to the king. The whole kingdom belongs to the king. Then he gives out those to the different personalities. So someone who has a big tract of land or many, many villages, then he acts like the king for those villagers. But if they can't get what they want in justice there, then they go to the kings above them. But they're called that. It says even in the Bhagavatam, one who hears the story of Pitu Maharaj, you know, then it mentions, you know, the Brahmin will become vastly learned and all that, like that. The king will become emperors. The Vaishya will become a king amongst Vaishyas. And the Shudra will become a great devotee. Like that. So sometimes there's advantages to being Shudras. Like that. So it's... That's what's mentioned. So you see, at the time, many times in the villages, all the small, they call them kings. Because they live like kings, but they are as big landlords. And so they own many, 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 many villages. So the village pays tax to them. And they offer the protection. So they have their own small little army and this and that. But it's economics. The king takes the tax to protect the people. The Vaishya protects the people to get the tax. Like that, you know, it's just the mentality's difference. That's how you tell the difference. It's mentality mainly. Like that. On the whole Varnashram system, that's why it has to be understood very finely, because it's just mentality. Otherwise, how do you tell the difference between a Brahmin who sings for the deity and is expert in music, and a Shudra who sings and is expert in music? Right? You have to know by some other things of character and other activities. You can't just go, well, he's a musician, so automatically he's a Shudra. Like that. Or he's a manager, therefore he's a Kshatriya. You know? He likes to do puja, therefore he's a Brahmin. No. Any devotee likes to do puja. Even in the Varnashram system, the means just in the more material aspect, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas like to do puja. You know? And in the Vedic system, the Shudras also do puja. Though they generally don't keep deities. They go like to the beach, and on special occasions they make deities in the sand and do all their worship and all that. And then afterwards, when they, you know, the ocean takes the, will come and wash the deity away. You know, so like this, and all these things are there. But it's just one has to know behind it. Because one is a... It's an occupational duty. It's a branch of knowledge they like. It's a hobby. One has to know what it is and then why they do it. Why they do it. So it's a very fine thing, the Vedic, the Varnashram. So the Brahmins and Kshatriyas have to understand the whole thing and find out how it works. At least the Kshatriyas must, and those Brahmins that deal with the Kshatriyas or advise the Kshatriyas or train Kshatriyas. They also must know, like that. They must know this particular branch of knowledge. Vaishyas and Shudras don't need to know. They just need to know what is the laws that pertain to them. What are the rules, their rules? You know, the general rules or the specific rules that just deal with them. They don't have to know the whole thing. Maybe so. So I think we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitya Gaura Prabhupada ki Jai